The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, Debbie and I are the authors of a new children's book out today. I'll tell you more about it. It's called Freedom Day, The Asher Way. I'll talk about some of the items in the news, the killing of al-Zawahiri, Pelosi going to Taiwan, and a new idea for reparations for slavery. Also examine some new evidence showing collusion between the Biden administration, between the U.S. government, and tech platforms to censor Americans in violation of the First Amendment. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, and a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Lots of stuff going on in the news today. I thought I would touch on two or three important news stories out there and then zoom into one of them. One of them that deals with the issue of reparations. But Biden is apparently in a very good mood because the United States has struck a drone strike and killed the Al-Qaeda number two. This is bin Laden's former number two, an Egyptian named Ayman al-Zawahiri. Now, interestingly, this Zawahiri guy did not go back to Egypt. He was still in Afghanistan, so still, you may say, under Taliban protection. And Biden seems to think he's done a magnificent thing by getting rid of al-Zawahiri. Now, make no mistake, it's a good thing to get rid of a very bad guy who was very much part of the planning of 9/11. But my enthusiasm over this is somewhat tempered by the fact that we have completely and disgracefully lost Afghanistan. Think of the Saigon-style retreat. Think of people falling out of planes. So, gee, what is this? You know, lose a country, gain a mullah. This al-Zawahiri guy was like 80 years old during 9/11, which would put him at like 100 years old. So, obviously, this is a good thing, a just outcome, but hardly something to lose your head over. Now, the other thing about it is notice that when Trump killed Soleimani, the Washington Post ran, you know, a very austere religious scholar killed by Trump. Why? Because it was Trump. When a Republican kills a terrorist, it's always like an ambiguous thing. The guy was really well-liked, very well-loved, did a lot of good work, theological accomplishments are now going to be listed by the Washington Post. Yet, when Biden kills al-Zawahiri, none of that. We don't hear about al-Zawahiri's theological accomplishments, which probably were comparable to Soleimani's. And so this is a comment really on the shamelessness and untrustworthiness of the media. This is not, in a way, even about directly Soleimani al-Zawahiri, but it illuminates the one-sidedness of the press. Nancy Pelosi is apparently pushing through with her trip to Taiwan, and there's kind of a weird rhetorical escalation about this. The Chinese are basically saying, listen, you know, this is very provocative, and you're going to take the blame for what happens because of this. So I think this is the Chinese really testing American strength and American will. It's not, by the way, we sometimes talk about these arguments as if they are solely a matter of will. And in the old days, when America had all the power, it was merely a question of will. Do we want to get involved or not? And if we do, the outcome is already settled. I think with Taiwan, it's important to realize it's not just a matter of will. Because quite apart from will, the question is, does the United States have the strength to be able to repel the Chinese if they move on Taiwan. We're talking, after all, about a conflict that would be thousands of miles away in the Chinese backyard. The Chinese are like, what, 1 degree away from Taiwan? It's like next door. So for the Chinese, this would be like fighting, quote, across the border or just right across the pond. But for America, it would be a whole different operation. Today is also election day, which is to say primary day. And there's a bunch of primaries going on around the country. And we're going to find out if a couple of, I won't call them never Trumpers, but there's certainly Republicans who voted for Trump's impeachment. Will they survive their primaries? My prediction is that in general, they will not. But I'll be able to, we'll know by tonight if that's correct. Important races going on in Arizona, for example, Carrie Lake up against Karen Robeson, I'm not quite sure which it is, but the Republican establishment, including, by the way, Mike Pence, they've kind of weighed in on the Robeson side, and then Trump has weighed in on Carrie Lake's side. I think this is a race that Carrie Lake should be able to pull off pretty decisively. She's been leading in the polls all the way. But again, we will have the full story tomorrow, and I will comment on it later. Now, I see that the Robert Johnson, the founder of BET, Black Entertainment TV, has come up with a reparations idea. Now, interestingly, he's a billionaire. You'd think he would be able to provide some reparations himself, but he doesn't have in mind that. His idea is reparations for everyone of African descent, reparations for slavery. This idea, by the way, is not new. It's been around for a while. And I'm now reading from his proposal. He's proposing a $350,000, $767,000. I love the specificity. Not just around $350,000. Every black who's descended from slaves deserves $350,767. So the implication of this detail, and I'm surprised he doesn't have and 37 cents, is kind of a way to suggest that he's been doing some serious math to come up with these calculations. Over 42 million African Americans are apparently eligible because they are descendants. The calculation is based upon, quote, lost income, education, savings, and homeownership. So the idea is that these blacks have lost out today, and this is the key point, over what happened in the United States, well, in the first half, really, of the 19th century. Wow. The total price tag is $14.7 trillion, which I point out is not entirely different from the gross domestic product. It's less than the gross domestic product, but it's not appreciably less over a whole year. So essentially what Robert Johnson wants to take an entire year of earnings of everybody in the whole country and essentially give it to blacks. Wow. Is this going to happen? I don't believe it is. And I had meant to say a couple of words about the logic of it or the illogic of it, but I'll defer the discussion of this topic to tomorrow when I'll take it up in a little more detail. But suffice to say that reparations is a bad idea. Why? Because although the slaves were unquestionably worse off, their descendants are equally unquestionably better off for living in the orbit of American freedom and American opportunity. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. The Percale sheets, they're available in a variety of colors and sizes, all on sale. For example, the queen size regular price, $89.98, now $39.98 with promo code Dinesh. So order now, because when they're gone, well, they're gone. The Percale sheets are breathable. They have a cool, crisp feel. These come with a 10-year warranty, a 60-day money-back guarantee. So don't miss out on this incredible offer. Limited supply, so order now. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. By the way, deep discounts on all the MyPillow products. Call 800-876-0227. That number, 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use the promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I want to talk about a new development involving the video platform called Rumble. and about its legal skirmish that's going on with Google. Now, by way of background, most of you probably know Rumble. I post the podcast every day, video on Rumble. And I also post it on YouTube. Now, YouTube is owned by Google. And Rumble is a tremendous platform. In fact, Chris Pavlovsky, the CEO of Rumble, started the platform not really because of a conservative mission, but to help small creators who are being ignored by Google to have a way to put up their content, distribute their content, and even monetize their content. And very soon, Chris realized that the big tech platforms were going in the censorship direction, and he realized, I don't want to do that. In fact, one time Chris said to me, he goes, wow, Chris is originally Canadian, now lives in Florida. But he's like, hey, Dinesh, I know you Americans are fighting about the Second Amendment. But he goes, I didn't realize you were fighting about the First Amendment. I didn't realize that free speech had suddenly become controversial. So here you, I'm the embarrassing situation with a Canadian more committed to free speech, apparently, than his American counterparts. And so Rumble has become a really great free speech platform. There you can say what you want about COVID, you can say what you want about the election, you can say what you want about climate change, and you're not going to get kicked off Rumble. So this is a reason for all of us to sign up at Rumble. If you do, please subscribe to my channel there. Well, Rumble has filed a lawsuit, this has been going on for a while now, against Google. And its reason for doing it is actually impeccable. It's based upon the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890. Now, the Sherman Antitrust Act basically says this. It says that it's illegal to, quote, monopolize or attempt to monopolize any part of the trade or commerce among several states or with foreign nations. In other words, the Sherman Antitrust Act is an anti-monopoly act. And it is in favor of allowing new competitors to arise in the market. Why? Because competition produces better products. It drives down prices. This happens in every other area. But interestingly, when it comes to search engines, Google has a virtual monopoly. Not that there aren't one or two other search engines, but Google is so dominant that pretty much everybody, in fact, think about it. We use the phrase Google as a verb. I'm going to Google it. Why? Because we have only one choice. When it comes to phones, we don't say, I'm going to Apple it, because there are other options. Similarly, when it comes to TV channels, it's not as if when you talk about watching TV or talking about watching a particular channel. So Rumble figured out that what Google is doing is they are manipulating the algorithms of their search engine to direct traffic to what? To YouTube, because they own it over Rumble and any other place. So this is something that Google is not permitted to do. If Google is in the search engine business, they have got to be in the search engine business. And they have to be neutral between things that they own and other competitive companies that are trying to compete with Google properties. In this case, let's think specifically about Rumble competing with YouTube. The Wall Street Journal decided to sort of check this out and see who's right. And so what the Wall Street Journal did, they asked their reporters to take the same video, or actually a whole bunch of videos, almost identical, put them up on YouTube and put them up other places, and then Google search them and see where Google drives traffic. And it turns out in every case, or an overwhelming amount of cases, Google is always driving the traffic to the site that it owns, namely YouTube. And even if Google mentions other sites, they're always much lower down in the Google search. So this is Rumble's point, that what Google is doing is not advancing free trade, but suppressing it. Not advancing competition, but illegally suppressing it. And so we've had an important ruling from a judge, which basically says that Rumble is now entitled to discovery. Now, discovery is nothing more than getting full information from the other side. But this is a critical turning point in the lawsuit because, no, Rumble hasn't won the suit, but it's won an important, fight in the overall war. Why? Because Google basically said, no, this suit needs to be dismissed because there are, in fact, other search engines, and what Rumble is saying is preposterous. But the judge goes, no. Quote, he says, In reviewing the plausibility of a complaint, the court accepts factual allegations and the complaint is true. So the court is accepting that Rumble is correct, that Google has manipulated its algorithm in this way. And the court is then saying, if Google did this, isn't Rumble entitled to full information from Google about how it runs its algorithms, how it puts up searches, how it decides who gets to be at the top and who gets to be number two and number three and who's not on the list at all? So this information, which Google considers proprietary, they never share with anybody, it's all behind closed doors, they're now going to have to turn it over to Rumble. And that's very good because it'll also see the light of public day. So not only does Rumble's suit advance, and Rumble now has the particulars it needs to prove its case because it's getting information from Google itself, but additionally, the public disclosure of all this is going to bring Google under wider public scrutiny, which is long overdue. It's pretty colorful at the grocery store in the produce section, all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies. Our friend Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature explains that all those colors you see represent nutritional variety. Now, I don't eat anywhere near the 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies that I need, so Balance of Nature is the way I give my body what it needs to stay healthy. This is why Debbie and I take these 6 little fruits and veggie capsules every day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies. 31. So variety equals vitality. Give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. Invest in your health. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA. I want to talk about some new information that has been uncovered by the America First Legal and shared with the Washington Free Beacon. But before I get to that, I want to talk about the meaning of censorship. The meaning of censorship in a legal sense is not merely the idea that you have a right to speak, and if somebody prevents you from speaking, they are undermining your First Amendment free speech rights. No. Let's say, for example, you come over to my house and I say, obviously arbitrarily, you cannot recite the Declaration of Independence while you're on my property. You can't do it in my yard, or you can't do it inside my house. Am I violating the First Amendment? And the answer is no. Why? Because I'm a private individual, and this would also, by the way, apply to private companies. Private companies are allowed to set their own standards for what kind of speech they use or don't use. And you can see where I'm going with this. These private companies, in theory, can be even large companies. They can be companies like Ford Motor Company or even Twitter or Facebook. By themselves, it would seem, they are not covered by the First Amendment. Why? Because the First Amendment says, and just the actual language of it, Congress shall make no law. In fact, a number of the Bill of Rights begin, Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of speech or of the press. Now, Congress here is interpreted a little more broadly than just Congress. It means the U.S. government. The U.S. government cannot restrict speech. Again, by extension, this is a complicated issue, but we won't go into it. It applies also to the states. The states are also, after all, government. And there's a doctrine in constitutional law called incorporation in which the limitations applied to the federal government are held by courts to also apply to the states. But putting that to the side, the issue here is that government can't restrict free speech, but private actors can. Now, this is what makes these latest discoveries I'm about to talk about so significant. What America First has been able to do is uncover communication between the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and all these social media companies. Social media companies like Twitter, like Facebook, like YouTube and Google. And what you see is that there is a continuous traffic of information back and forth between a governmental agency, which is, by the way, covered by the First Amendment, and these social media platforms. And what is the government agency doing, the CDC? It's sending the names and posts, specific posts, of people to be flagged or to have them deplatformed or to have them banned. So this is, I would say, coming very close to the smoking gun we're looking for. Why? Because if a government agency is using its leverage or using its power with social media companies to restrict others, then the social media companies are not acting solely on their own. They're not merely private actors restricting speech. They are, in fact, private actors operating through constant collusion with the government. In other words, they are now covered by the First Amendment. Why? Because it isn't just the private actor doing it. It's the private actor doing it at the behest, at the instruction, at the dictation of the federal government. We see regular chats and communications between the CDC and these tech agencies. We see high levels of coordination between the government and the tech industry. So, in a sense, you remember when Biden wanted to set up his, quote, disinformation board, and there was a public outcry, and the woman that he appointed to do this turned out to be an absolute dunce. I mean, what, kind of a former, an aspiring dancer and yoga instructor is now in charge of classifying disinformation in the United States. Well, anyway, all of that came to dust, all of that blew up, and the Biden administration doesn't really have that disinformation board. But notice that in a way they do. Why? Because they're operating through these tech platforms. They're operating through private, supposedly private platforms to achieve their will. And we know that multiple government agencies are attempting this, but we know that the CDC is actually doing it. In fact, one email shows that a senior CDC official appears anonymously without giving the name at a Google 2020 Trusted Media Summit. So Google has a summit. Who's supposed to be at the summit? Well, according to the website, it's for, quote, journalists, fact-checkers, educators, researchers, others who work in the area of fact-checking, verification, media literacy, and fighting misinformation. So, interesting, this is a private conglomeration of people who work in the so-called disinformation industry. They obviously mean misinformation. Disinformation really is information that comes from a foreign government. The Russian government is doing disinformation. The Chinese are doing disinformation. You and I can't really do disinformation. We can put out information that's not true. That would be misinformation. But the point here is that the CDC shows up at this private event. Why? Because there is obviously a behind-the-scenes concert or collaboration between the government and these private entities. So I think all of this means, there's also, by the way, a little tidbit here. Facebook is awarding the CDC with, quote, millions of dollars in ad credits, which means the CDC can use Facebook for its propaganda, and it's free. They don't have to pay Facebook. So again, this is a further sign of the government and the private sector working together to suppress free speech. I think all of this means is that If you or I are thrown off Facebook and we're able to show that this was at the direction of the CDC or some government agency, we are in very strong First Amendment territory. And if we can help our case to move up the ranks to the Supreme Court, we might find the kind of resounding victory that we need that would once and for all put all these tech platforms on notice that they can't be propaganda vehicles for the U.S. government. Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan market event that could be coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. And that's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? This is not a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walser is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money. We can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walser's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. I've been seeing some really amusing images on social media of patriots having, quote, Dropbox tailgate parties. What? This is actually kind of fantastic because, in fact, here's an image I have in front of me of about 8 or 10 people, and they're all sitting on lawn chairs, and they've got like they've got drinks, they've got snacks. I think I see a cooler. And what are they doing? They're just sitting out there watching a Dropbox. So, you know, this is bad news for the mules because the mules show up, they look to the left, look to the right. What? Wait, what are all these people doing here? So these are patriots. And what are they doing? They're basically responding to 2,000 mules. Why? Because in 2,000 mules, we show that these Dropboxes, these privately funded mail-in Dropboxes, are the venue at which the mules deposit fraudulent and illegal votes. Now, there are some places, the Wisconsin notably, where the Wisconsin Supreme Court stepped in and basically go, you can't have these mail-in Dropboxes anymore. Sayonara mail-in Dropboxes. And that's probably the best solution. Just kind of get rid of these altogether. But we live in a big country. States are going to make their own laws. There are going to be some states where you have Dropboxes. Turns out in Arizona, for now, they have, by the way, passed election integrity, which puts some limitations on the Dropboxes, but you still have Dropboxes. And so now the election rules call for 24/7 surveillance on all Dropboxes. All you have to do is go to CISA, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Agency, look up the rules, read down the requirements, and it says right there, Dropboxes need surveillance, but states have been flouting this. Whether they've been flouting it innocently, like, oh, we just never got around to it, we don't have the budget for it, or whether they're doing it because they want to enable the mules is an open question. But the issue is a lot of states do not, even now, have full surveillance on all Dropboxes. And so what these patriots are saying is, okay, listen, if you won't do it, if you won't follow the rules, if you won't carry out your responsibilities, we're going to sort of have to do it for you. We're not going to be okay with unsupervised boxes where anyone can pull shenanigans and no one will be the wiser for it. We're going to have to wait, you know, what, another year and a half for True the Vote to do geo-tracking to find out what happened in the 2022 election? That's not happening. So to quote an article from Gateway Pundit, they're preventing the mules from stealing the election this time around. And then there are posts by various people who are part of this patriot gang pointing out that they're having these, quote, we are running with your Dropbox tailgate parties. We ran one mule off just by being here. So according to this group, they say that a car pulled up and a guy was about to get out when he saw that you have all these people sitting around and he quickly took off. Now, I suppose that's an incident that's open to more than one interpretation, but the way it's interpreted by these guys manning the boxes is, you know, this is a guy who is hoping to be able to pull off some bad stuff, notice that we are here. In other words, there are eyes on the Dropboxes, bad news for the crooks, and so this dude took off. By the way, the same thing is happening in Washington State. Gateway Pundit reported again that in Washington State, patriots are like, they've actually been going around creating these neighborhood committees, not so much a tailgate party, but neighborhood committees, again, to keep eyes on the Dropbox. Look, all that these people are trying to do, they're not insurrectionists, they're not domestic terrorists, they're not trying to subvert an election, they're not trying to suppress the vote, they're simply trying to make sure that we have what our country needs to be able to promise to all its citizens, and that is free and fair elections. Inflation is real. The CPI is at another 40-year high. Now, Biden and his team keep denying it, but inflation doesn't go away because you deny or minimize it. The recession, too, is real. Again, they're denying it. And again, a recession doesn't stop being a recession if you stop calling it a recession. Well, if all your money is in the market or tied to the U.S. dollar, you're taking a big risk. You're messing with fire. Well, thankfully, I'm diversified into gold with Birch Gold, and it's not too late for you to take action, too. Text Dinesh to 989898. Get a free information kit on how to diversify and protect your savings with precious metals. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of satisfied customers, Birch Gold is the place to be. Debbie and I trust Birch Gold. We're happy customers. This is a way to secure your future with gold from Birch Gold. So go ahead, text Dinesh to 989898. Get real help from Birch Gold today. Text Dinesh to 989898. Claim your free, no obligation information kit on how to protect your hard-earned savings with gold. Guys, I'm really thrilled to welcome to the podcast Dr. Trent Talbot. He's the CEO and founder of Brave Books, a conservative children's book publishing company, started, well, a year ago, 2021. And the idea for Brave Books is to create children's books that install pro-American, pro-God, and anti-woke values. Trent, it's a real pleasure to have you. Thanks to you, Debbie and I are now having our debut officially today as joint authors or co-authors of a children's book. Talk a little bit first about Brave Books and how you got into this, and then we'll talk about our book, which is called Freedom Day, The Asher Way. All right.
Well, first, we at Brave are honored that you and Debbie are joining us. We're so excited. We've been big fans for a long time. Brave, we're pushing back in the culture war. We think that there is a real war going on for the hearts, minds, and souls of our kids, and that culture is raising more children than parents are today. And we think that we need to enter that space and fight back and to fight culture with culture. And we're doing that through books. You know, we think that books have a special way of sparking the imagination of children to get their attention, and it allows parents to use stories as a framework for having important conversations with their kids.
I mean, this book, Freedom Day, The Asher Way, a couple of things about it. I mean, first of all, Debbie and I were just stunned by the beautiful illustrations that accompany the book. It just is a pleasure to hold and a pleasure to read. And the theme of the book is socialism. So in some ways, it's loosely based on, a much longer and more dense book I wrote, United States of Socialism. Debbie, of course, has firsthand experience of socialism in Venezuela. And what I like about it is the way in which you've sort of taken our narrative and transformed it into a very disarming and simple story that children can fully grasp, just the concept of taking from someone something that they have earned or trying to fix a price regardless of what costs are. What's the formula for putting these books out there?
Well, first is to partner with people like yourself who are experts in the topic, we had conversations about, we have a real challenge in teaching children a complex topic like this. And so, our philosophy is that children learn best through story. And so we take the core, the core elements of socialism, for example, and we boil that down and then we incorporate it into the story. And then once they see the story and they get lost in the universe with the characters, then it gives parents a real opportunity to have a conversation about that topic. I think that without stories, parents just go to their default, which is speaking on a conceptual level, and that loses children every time. And so the story is how we capture their imagination. And then in the back of the book, we have games and discussion questions, which allow the parents to have a more in-depth, more specific conversation on the topic in particular. And we break down, why is it not fair? And it really gets kids thinking about the topic. So that's
awesome. I mean, I'd like to just read a couple of lines, which gives you a flavor of how this goes. So there's a whole kind of little world here, and it's Freedom Island. And you've got this guy, Asher, and everything was going well until Asher, who's the mayor, realized that the coins he was using for Freedom Day were almost gone. But just then, he caught a wonderful whiff of the cows steaming apple pies. And then I like this line in parentheses, cows make excellent pies. And then Asher thought, we have to have this for the festival. Wouldn't everyone like it better if pies didn't cost so much? And so he makes a new rule. Now, point I want to get here is that's the socialist way of thinking. Here you have these pies. They cost, whatever they cost. And your guy's like, how about if we, the government, sets the price of pies? And then the story kind of takes off from there. And it kind of shows the chaos all over Freedom Island when everybody's trying to accommodate to this new rule. So to me, it's an ingenious way to reach young minds. Anyway, we're very proud to be associated with this. Let's talk about your kind of strategy for distributing these books. Talk about the strategy more broadly, then we'll talk about how people can check out this book.
Okay. Well, yeah, our strategy, you know, we partner with people like yourself to help get the word out. Yeah, I was an ophthalmologist before I started Brave Books. And yeah, that's a big financial risk to take, just hoping that it'll catch on. So part of our strategy from the beginning was to partner with conservative icons like yourself and to help raise awareness about what we're doing. And then we don't go through Amazon. Everything's through bravebooks.com. And we're a book of the month model in which parents subscribe, and every single month they get a new book that teaches a new conservative lesson or value. And we cover things like gender identity, the sanctity of life, socialism, just core values like honesty, hard work, freedom of speech, Second Amendment. And every single book, it's a really fun story that kids just love. And we're also telling an overarching narrative. So every story takes place on Freedom Island with the same cast of characters, Team Brave, and kids just fall in love with the characters. They really don't like the villains like Culture the Vulture, Blackheart, and so they just have a lot of fun with it. And we hear from all of our subscribers that the best day of the month is whenever a new book comes in.
Well, this is so cool because I remember when we first talked, Debbie and I we had this idea of kind of creating our own menagerie of characters, and you guys were like, no, we actually have created, we've already done this work, we've created a whole ecosystem, so to speak, and so what we want to do is take your message, your theme, your story, embed it in this kind of continuing ecosystem so there's a familiarity for kids. They're meeting the same characters, the same kind of world in book after book, and it allows them imaginatively to live there, doesn't it?
Right, yeah, and with their first book, they get a big poster. It's like a 4x6 poster, and it's a map of Freedom Island. It's got all the places on Freedom Island to visit. You got Rushington, which is where your book took place, Mount of Valor, which is a volcano, Shivermore, all these fun spots. And kids just love visiting new locations, putting their stickers on the map, you know, to show that they visited. And so they love it.
Trent, this is great work you're doing, and I want to commend you because we often talk about transforming culture and people will write op-eds about the need for it. But one thing I like to do, we like to be a part of, and of course like to feature on the podcast, is people who are actually on the supply side coming up with new ideas for comedy, new ideas for children's books, kind of doing the task that needs to be done on our side in the kind of perilous moment we find ourselves in this culture. So let me emphasize, the website is bravebooks.com, just bravebooks.com. Our book is called Freedom Day, The Asher Way, co-authored by Dinesh and Debbie D'Souza. And it's really fun. We've enjoyed being part of it. I hope you'll enjoy checking it out. And check out the other books also on Brave Books. Hey, Trent, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks so much, Dinesh. Pleasure.
Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted, these aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to suffer or endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie's excited she finally gets to do her bar exercise class now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie's even able to do planks and push-ups, so she's like, wow, this is great. I never want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. Feel the difference. We are now on to the turning point in the Iliad, the event that precipitates the final course of action that takes the book to its climax and to its sort of shattering conclusion. I've been describing how the Trojans are advancing relentlessly. They've reached the Greek wall. They have made a breach in the wall. The breach was initially made by the Trojan fighter Sarpedon, but then Hector, the leader of the Trojan forces, the son of King Priam, picks up a giant rock, picks it up kind of effortlessly, and smashes the wall, creating a big, you may say, hole in the wall through which the Trojans can come pouring through. Now, interestingly, the way that Homer describes this is he goes into his mode of dual action. So here is Hector. He smashes the wall. The Trojans pour through. But Zeus lets us know that Apollo, the god Apollo, is also fighting on the Trojan side. So just as you have Zeus's wife Hera and Athena on the Greek side, Poseidon as well, you have Apollo on the Trojan side. And so in a beautiful simile, and the Iliad is full of similes, riveting similes, and they're not just similes, you know, she was pretty like a flower, not that kind of thing. They're more elaborate similes. And so Homer tells us that even though Hector brings down or breaks the wall, at the same time, says Homer, Apollo, aiding the Trojans, kicks down the wall. So this is that, as I mentioned, the divine action and human action occurring simultaneously, neither one kind of canceling out the other, two levels of action achieving the same outcome. And in a kind of memorable simile, Homer says that Apollo kicked down the wall, quote, like a child kicking down a sandcastle. So think about that, how a kind of a truant kid just effortlessly, boom, down goes the sandcastle. Homer says it's with that ease that this impregnable wall constructed by the Greeks goes just is destroyed by Apollo, and the Trojans come pouring through. And now we want to move to a very important character in the Iliad, and this is Patroclus, the friend of Achilles. And Homer has very skillfully set up Patroclus. He's not a major character in the early books of the Iliad. We sort of see glimpses of him. But by seeing those glimpses, Homer gives us a window into his character. What's he like? And sets up the important actions that Patroclus is going to be a part of. So when we meet Patroclus for the first time, this is in Book 1. He is enlisted by Achilles to be the guy who turns Briseis back over to Agamemnon. Remember, Agamemnon's like, I'm taking your captive, Briseis, because I've lost my concubine. I'm going to grab yours. And Patroclus has the sort of unpleasant task of saying, okay, here you go. And that's when we first meet Patroclus. He's kind of Achilles' sort of assistant in carrying out this task. And when Patroclus reappears in Book 9, remember when three emissaries are sent by Agamemnon, Phoenix and Ios and Odysseus, to try to persuade Achilles to return to battle. And I mentioned that Achilles is sort of sitting, playing the lyre and singing kind of songs about great deeds of the past. Well, Patroclus is with Achilles, and Patroclus is on the scene. And when the three emissaries come and Achilles basically says, let's sit down and have a meal, Patroclus sort of prepares the meal. Patroclus and Achilles together, it's not like Patroclus is the waiter, Patroclus and Achilles together serve the meal to the three emissaries. So we meet Patroclus there, and then in the plot leading up to Patroclus' main action, which is going to start in Book 16, Achilles sends Patroclus. Achilles has heard some rumors that some of the important Greek fighters have been wounded. And as it turns out, three. Agamemnon and Odysseus and Diomedes. And Achilles has also heard the Trojans are advancing, kind of exactly as he wanted them to. And they are moving toward, they're almost at the Greek ships. In fact, Achilles doesn't really know, but the Trojans have reached the ships by this point. They're about to start setting the ships on fire. And Achilles sends Patroclus. He's sort of curious. Patroclus, by the way, urges Achilles to go back and fight. Achilles won't do that. But he says to Patroclus, hey, you go. Go talk to Nestor, the kind of wise old man of the Greeks. Find out how the Greeks are doing. Find out who is wounded, who is out of the battle. Find out if the Trojans have advanced. Have they reached the ships? Achilles knows that they haven't reached his ships. but he doesn't know if they've reached the Greek ships at all. And so Patroclus kind of goes on this errand, talks to Nestor, finds out what's going on, and as we'll see in the next segment, when he comes back, encounters a wounded Greek warrior and begins to tend to him, which provides a kind of glimpse at who Patroclus is and what his character is really like.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
At the beginning of Book 16, we read in Homer, quote, Patroclus came to Achilles and stood by him weeping. And right there, you get an idea of Patroclus. He is gentle. He is a man who cries, a little unusual for a Homeric warrior to weep, really under any circumstances. But we have rare examples of weeping in the Iliad. This is one of them. We'll see later. Achilles weeps over the death of Patroclus. Weeping is a theme in the Iliad, but whenever it occurs, it's significant. And Patroclus comes to Achilles weeping, and Achilles is a little contemptuous, almost a little insulting. Quote, what are these tears about, Patroclus? You're like a little girl pestering her mother to pick her up, pulling at her hem as she tries to hurry off, and looking up at her with tears in her eyes until she gets her way. What an elegant and instructive simile, because what Homer's saying is that, you know how a little girl pulls? So the little girl is kind of a way of saying that that Patroclus is girlish. Now, not girlish in the effeminate sense, but girlish in the sense of being emotional, of being, of submitting, if you will, to tears. And yet Achilles knows that Patroclus wants something. That's why the simile continues. The little girl is sort of imploring her mother, looking up with big eyes, but she actually is about to make a request. As we know, Patroclus here is about to make a request. He's about to ask Achilles, please come back and fight, but if you won't, Patroclus knows how dead set Achilles is, and so he has a kind of plan B. And his plan B is, hey, Achilles, if you won't fight, our side is so demoralized that if you will let me put on your armor, take your shield, use your chariot, maybe I will be mistaken for you. Maybe the Greeks, seeing my chariot, meaning Achilles' chariot, and Achilles' armor, will think Achilles is returning to battle and they'll be fired up, and the Trojans, by contrast, seeing Achilles, will be terrified, will retreat. This will give the Greeks at least a temporary boost in what is turning out to be, at this point, a losing battle. So this is really Patroclus' petition. This is what he wants to ask Achilles. But the reason Patroclus is weeping is not because of that. He's actually weeping because of something that we've seen a few books earlier in the Iliad. And this is the kind of skill of Homer. He's talking about an event that occurs in Book 11. That's when we last see Patroclus. And then he picks it up in Book 16, but Homer remembers exactly where Patroclus left off, or where he left off with Patroclus. And you might think, wait a minute, Book 11 and Book 16, that's five books away. But let's remember, we're still in the longest day of the Iliad. So even though the Iliad is describing events that take a long time to relay, all these events going all the way back to around Book 12, all the way to Book 18, all occur within the space of 24 hours. And as I mentioned in the last segment, you have Patroclus who's been dispatched by Achilles on a mission, which is to say, go talk to Nestor, come tell me how the Greeks are doing. But on his way back, Patroclus sees a wounded Greek fighter. This is a guy named Eurypylus. And now I quote, he put his arm around Eurypylus' chest and helped him to his hut. This is Patroclus. His attendant, when he saw him, spread hides on the floor, so animal hides. Patroclus had him lie down and with a knife cut from his thigh the barbed arrow. Evidently an arrow had shot through Eurypylus' thigh. He washed the wound off with warm water and patted into it a bitter root that he had rubbed between his hands, an anodyne that took away the pain. The bleeding stopped and the wound was dry. So look at the vivid description of Homer, the way in which Patroclus tends to these wounds, and yet you also see Patroclus's character. He's a really nice guy. He doesn't know Eurypylus, but he is moved by compassion at Eurypylus's plight, so he delays his return to Achilles. He tends to him, and it's the plight of not only Eurypylus in particular, but all the Greek soldiers, all the wounded, all the dead, all the dying, that is why Patroclus is weeping. He's weeping for the obstinacy of Achilles, who won't re-enter the battle, and as a consequence, he's weeping for the enormous destruction that the Trojans are wreaking on the Greeks.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.